Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, February 1st, 2010. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you, as we do always. And in a moment, we're going to begin today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, Open to the Truth of Who You Are. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners, because I'm honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. I realize you have many other things you can do with your time, and I'm so delighted you chose to spend some of it with us. I encourage you to participate, and you can easily do that by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, you just need to press 1 to let me know you have a question or comment. If you're over on the web chat, just type in your questions or your comments, and I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Let me remind you that the show is live, so that means anything can happen. The most common thing that happens is we lose signals. You lose your phone signal, and that can even happen to me. So if your call is suddenly lost, just dial in again at 347-539-5700, same number you called in the first place. And don't worry about missing anything, because even while your signal's lost, the show is still being recorded, and it will be available for you later under on-demand episodes over on my show page. Now, I'm Flora Brown again. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also a mom of 4, a grandma of 3, and I just recently retired, not too long ago, after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels. If you haven't already done so, I want you to get over to my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, because over there you can now invest in yourself by taking advantage of a complimentary coaching session, which I'm calling Jumpstart Your 2010 Goals. So go over there and click where it says Get a Coach Now, and you'll see how to sign up. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. And to get at that goal, each week I interview guests from various fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, you name it, all of these things that have to do with our happiness. They all contribute to our happiness. If you enjoy the show, you can easily go down and make a comment afterwards on the show page, or you could even click and make this show your favorite. That would be cool. Today we're going to get started. My guest is Dr. Liara Covert. Hi, Liara.
Hi, Flora. How are you?
I am great. I want to tell my listeners a bit about you before we begin, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Now, Liara is an empowerment guide. Now, listen, empowerment guide. So what does she do? She offers tools to help people raise awareness of their feelings and their programmed beliefs, their thoughts, so you can choose to open a multidimensional sense of reality. Now, as you awaken to your journey, she inspires you to open to the higher self and recognize core energy frequencies. She shares impressions of expansion in writing, including stages of her own awakening during perceived milestones. So she's not just talking from her textbook learning, she's also talking from her experience. Her sense of consciousness expands during extensive travel to spiritual places on earth, astral planes and beyond, and also while connecting to kindred spirits. The scope of her training includes transference energy, intuitive healing, cultural and interdisciplinary studies, and psychoanalysis. She's an alumnus of McGill, which is in Canada, the Sorbonne, and that's in France, and Oxford in England. So we are very delighted to have you today, Dr. Lyra Covert. Welcome again.
Thank you very much, Flora. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Now, you have a new book out, or relatively new, correct? Self-Closure is your latest book, correct?
Self-Disclosure, Changes from Within, is published in 2009. I actually have a book coming out this week as well called Cosmic Synchronicity.
Say that again? Synchronicity?
Cosmic Synchronicity is the one coming out this week. It just isn't listed on Amazon yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, today let's talk about self-disclosure, changes from within, because even just the title of that intrigues me. It makes me believe that our changes, our happiness, come from within, which, of course, I already believe. But we need to keep emphasizing that because I'm not sure everybody gets that. Now, I did take a look at your website at Amazon to learn more about your book, and I discovered that you have 5 chapters, and each one begins with quotations, and then you present lessons, stories, and then it ends with questions. And these are not right or wrong answer type questions, because these are questions we have to answer for ourselves, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And in your book, you cover the 5 stages of growth. Could you tell us what those 5 stages of growth are?
Sure. In the context of the book, I separate it into 5 chapters. And the first stage I describe as recognizing why you do what you do, which means why you think and feel as you do. The second step I describe as learning to recognize and understand your fears. And the third step is learning to assess your evolution, that is moving through your thoughts, feelings, and fears. The fourth chapter has to do with raising awareness of your perception, how you take in information from your life experience. And the fifth chapter is all about how to attune to the power of love in different areas of your life.
Okay. Wow. Now, I noticed on your website that you read from one of your chapters on approaching self-acceptance. Could you tell us what we would expect to find and how we could benefit from this chapter? Because it seems to me that self-acceptance is a key component of happiness and making changes. So how would we benefit from this chapter on approaching self-acceptance?
Well, it's interesting that you would choose that particular chapter. I've structured the chapters or broken them down so that if a person is going through a stage where self-acceptance is a question or a focus, then they can go directly to that chapter. They don't necessarily have to read the book cover to cover. But what I do in a given chapter is I start out with quotations from inspirations. I list the names of 145 individuals at the front of the book, many of which the readers will recognize, some of which maybe not. But they sort of set the stage for the theme of a given section. And then I tend to have a list of lessons to orient that section. And that sort of enables people to feel grounded. And the actual sections themselves are structured in the form of dialogue. And different readers interpret this on different levels. Some people will look at it as a protagonist and a conscience, for example. Other people will look at it as themselves and maybe their higher self or a guardian angel, for example, something that enables them to see beyond the emotional side of things. So when it comes to self-acceptance, many people will reflect on self-doubt. They will give themselves reasons not to accept whatever their circumstances are. They'll often focus on not being happy in a given set of conditions. But the dialogue empowers the reader to see things from a different point of view and to reframe hardship, especially, or adversity, so that the reader can get advantages or blessings out of where they are.
I like that phrase, reframe adversity. Because what you're talking about there is taking the situation that is happening and looking at it a different way or putting it in a different context, correct?
Yes, inviting the readers to step outside of the mind in many cases and learn to see things from another perspective. There are other chapters where, or sections where I'll focus on a situation at work, for example, or a situation with a relationship, and there'll be one perspective where someone will be upset with a given set of conditions. And in the dialogue, the other perspective offers to shed light on another way of interpreting the circumstances so that things do not seem as bad as they might at the beginning. And many people benefit from being able to reframe where they are.
I was really attracted to the way you did the dialogue with the bold print and being able to read that. And I'm glad you pointed out that that dialogue can, we can see it a number of different ways, whatever we choose. So like you said, it can be our higher self, or we can perceive it as another perspective. So it's up to us how we perceive it. But it certainly was interesting the way that you set it up so that it, it does take the situation and puts it in a different light.
Many people do appreciate having the opportunity to reframe things, because so often if you get wrapped up in your emotions, for example, you get upset, angry, sad, just to the extreme, sometimes it, it seems difficult to see beyond the emotions and to see something worthwhile in a given situation. And the way that I have set up the book so that it's not only in a dialogue, but it's, as you pointed out, in two different fonts, it enables the reader to sort of even distance themselves further from their own circumstances and sort of look at it in the context of what's going on in the book. But then at the end of a section, as you mentioned earlier as well, I have questions where the readers can add context in their own lives, because they won't necessarily relate to any or all of the situations that are explored in the book itself.
So given this this idea of reframing, it makes me believe that a situation, whatever occurs to us, is neutral. It's neither good nor bad, but who decides that? We decide whether it's good or bad. We're the ones that put that value on it. Is that what you're getting at?
That's what I offer as perspective, yes. I sense that judgment begins and ends within, and as each individual moves toward greater self-acceptance and more unconditional love, then they step out of the judgment and they're able to see beyond the black and white of a given situation and see everything as neutral, and that they actually color the circumstances based on their mood, based on their conditioning and beliefs. And it's through recognizing what those beliefs are that they're able to work through them and decide whether they outgrow them and choose to move on.
I like that, color the situation, since that's in the title of my book.
Color Your Life Happy.
Color Your
it's
Life
your choice,
happy.
Flora.
Exactly. Some of the questions that you mentioned on your site that will be answered when we read the book, I wanted to mention a couple of these and have you respond to them. One of them you asked was, why do we encounter certain kinds of people? And what is your take on why we encounter certain types of people in our lives?
Well, what I suggest to the readers is that everyone they encounter is a mirror image of some aspect of their inner self. And how they respond to a given situation or person says something about their insides as well. And one of the examples I give in the book was a situation where I had, or the protagonist, depending on how you look at it, had a difficult time with an employer. And the employer was perceived as an enemy and someone who was out to get the test. And the protagonist worked through those emotions and came to the realize that, wait a second, what is this person teaching me? And the protagonist is introduced to the perspective that perhaps the perception of an enemy is actually a great gift, and that everyone you encounter actually offers you wisdom if you are ready to step back and recognize what is offered to you.
Okay, so even people that we perceive as problematic or that we have conflict with, you're saying that there's some part of that that we need to have either as a lesson, or did you say it also resonates with some part of us, that something in us that's
for example,
going up to that?
Yes, just to expand. To me, what I draw attention to in the book for the reader's benefit is I invite them to recognize how they respond to their circumstances or to their encounters with different people. And the emotions they feel are actually clues. They're a gauge to how balanced they are, how loving they are towards other people. And if you choose to view each situation and each person you encounter as an opportunity to learn something about love and forgiveness, for example, then you would frame that situation very differently than if you thought someone was out to get you, or if you thought that something very different from that. And you're able to consider the instinctual ways you interpret your situations and compare those, if you choose, to other alternatives which are explored in the book.
So if we were perfectly balanced and we encounter a person and we encountered someone who we otherwise would consider antagonistic, but if we're balanced, then we're going to have a neutral response to that person. Is that what you're saying? Whereas a person who's not balanced would react a certain way. But if we're balanced, that person isn't going to pull us out of shape, as we say.
That's a good way to look at it. If you react emotionally, then someone is able to press your emotional buttons. And if you are at peace within yourself, then regardless of what's happening outside of you, that doesn't faze you. If you can make an analogy with what's going on in your life, for example, if there are many things that don't seem to be going the way you might like, you might get more frustrated. But if you can work to that point where nothing fazes you, you don't get a parking spot or there's traffic or, you know, the mail doesn't come on time or all the things that you would like to happen don't happen, if you don't allow those things to bother you, then you have a very different outlook on life, and you realize that it's up to you to decide how you're going to perceive what's happening. It's not up to anyone else.
Right. Okay. Now, I have a feeling that the next question I want to ask you is going to have a similar response, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Why are we afraid of what we're afraid of? You know, we all have some fears about various things. Why are we afraid of those particular things?
Well, fear arises in people for many different reasons, but fundamentally it relates to conditioning in many cases. Mm-hmm. When you think about the birth of a child, for example, in theory this child is fearless. And until adults or people around that child begin to say, no, don't do that, that's bad, or don't do that, that's wrong, then you develop a sense of fear or apprehension about wondering whether or not you're doing the right thing. And over time, as you grow up, you adopt a lot of these behaviors because of what people have taught you is acceptable in your line of thinking or in your culture. And many people spend an enormous amount of time reverse conditioning and learning not only why they have the fears they do, but how to actually work through them and release them, because it all begins and ends in the mind. And once you realize that, then you can work through it, and fear no longer controls you in the same way.
Which brings to mind, as you were talking about being in a certain culture, in a certain context, in a certain family, that sometimes if you no longer are being served by that fear, you no longer want to respond in the same way that you were brought up to respond, sometimes it brings about a problem in the relationship that you have with those people, whether it's your family, your job, your culture. And then that brings up another time that you need to make a decision about whether you need to move away from an environment where you're constantly going to have to be challenged for growing past that fear. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Well, it does. It does. Okay. And one of the things the book invites readers to do is to explore their ideas of things like disappointment or setbacks or obstacles and why they have them, because people do outgrow certain perceptions and beliefs, and sometimes this relates to an entourage. I gave an example in the book. In one case, it has to do with horseback riding, I believe, and it relates to a childhood fear that developed because of being bitten, bucked off, maimed in some way by most animals that were ever ridden, and how this person worked through this. And during the time that this protagonist was riding, this protagonist interacted with certain people who are horse people. But that person decided, well, maybe that wasn't a road that she wanted to follow, and so she worked through her fear in her own way, but she also took a different course. She ended up meeting new people, doing something else, and that was right for her. And you can sense a similar analogy in workplaces, because there are some people who develop personality clashes with colleagues, peers, and they just don't feel that a place is right for them. But an important thing to recognize is that you take your fears with you. And so if you are not ready or willing to explore what those are, if you leave a particular workplace or environment where that fear is brought to your attention, that doesn't mean that it's not going to show itself somewhere else if you don't choose to work through it.
Right. That reminds me of in relationships, I've heard people say that if you have the tendency to attract certain kinds of people, you may well end a marriage, divorce, whatever, and move on to another partner, but you're going to attract the same partner and same type of partner, different head, same type, because that's what you are drawing to you. So what you're saying here about the fear or the whatever situation you had on the job, you certainly are taking it with you if you haven't resolved it. So you're going to have the same type of situation occur, the same fear or whatever the conflict is, in the new setting. So it's a matter of not trying to run from it, but to work through it and work it out. You may still leave that job, but you need to work out whatever it was that was troubling, because like you said, it begins and ends in your mind and in your thinking.
That's right. And the whole concept of self-disclosure invites a different level of self-honesty. And when it comes to fear or other emotions that sort of will surface, they're actually signs to you that something requires your attention or would benefit from your attention. And if you listen to those signs within you and you explore those things, then you work through them and they no longer control you. And so the book is very much an empowerment tool in that way, because it sort of invites people to take their own steps to work through whatever's bothering them in a given set of circumstances. And it doesn't tell a reader exactly how to do it, but it invites the reader to go through a process of self-reflection in order to better understand himself or herself. And that way, they're able to figure out what course of action is most appropriate for that person.
Now, do you find that the self-reflection is helped by things like meditation or relaxation or deep breathing, what kinds of things can we do to help ourselves get into a state where we can reflect and discover things about ourselves?
Well, in the book, in the first chapter, when I invite readers to gain new insight into why they think and feel as they do, I do mm-hmm. offer some suggestions, including seeking solitude, taking time alone, and exploring different kinds of meditations. Mm-hmm. People do tend to find that taking 15 or 20 minutes a day of quiet time, mm-hmm. doing nothing or listening to very peaceful music in itself can be very helpful to learning to quiet the mind, because many mm-hmm. people ultimately find that there's so much going on in their minds that they don't necessarily remember how to listen to themselves, and they need yes. to go through a process of remembering.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think people are afraid to get quiet and to listen to themselves, so they bombard themselves with nonstop television, radio. They always have some noise. I sometimes wonder if it's because they're afraid of the quiet, of what may come up.
Well, I sense in some cases that is true. I heard something that caused me to chuckle recently that was stated by a woman by the name of Pema Chodron. She's actually a Buddhist nun. But she looked at the example of long-distance flights, and because I am based in Australia, it takes 2 days to fly from there to where my family lives. I'm very familiar with long flights. And on these long flights, this nun was saying how difficult it is for human beings to sit for 14 hours. And mm-hmm. she sort of described how In many cases, they have at their disposal all of these television stations, movies, they have meals every so often, they have musical choices, they have mm-hmm. all these activities, even meditation mm-hmm. options on a screen in front of mm-hmm. them, because they don't feel comfortable doing nothing. And for her, it was quite a challenge to not focus on all these options.
Right.
And she's quite an experienced meditator.
So it was having the opposite effect on her. It was, and I experience that sometimes too. I long for things to just be quiet, but I may be in a setting where the same thing, that where the powers that be feel that they need to have something going. I was in a restaurant having lunch with a friend, and the television set was so loud. And we were trying to have a conversation, but for whatever reason, that restaurant felt that they needed to have television programming going on. And it was terribly annoying to me. So I wonder, you know, in the long-distance flights, the same thing. Sometimes there is so much going on that if you even want to read a book quietly, it's difficult to do that. Just too much activity, but I suppose it's because people need that. Before we go any further, I want to get you to tell us about your radio show and about your other books before we go on. Would you tell us about those, please?
Sure. I actually have a radio show on Sunday evenings. It's Sunday night, 5:30 p.m. EST, which is actually Monday morning, 9:30 a.m. in Melbourne. It's an hour and a half program. It's the Dream Builders Australia blog talk radio show. Mm-hmm. And many of my shows involve guests. And the purpose of the show is to really raise consciousness and to really provoke thought about a number of esoteric subjects, so listeners mm-hmm. can look at the pre-show notes just for an idea of some of the guests I've had. Mm-hmm. And I actually am a co-host on Friday nights as well on Aware Talk Radio with an American monk, Stephen Harefield, and we talk about consciousness as well.
Is that on the internet?
Yes, that's on Blog Talk Radio as well.
Or what's the name of that one again? I'm sorry. I didn't get it.
That's Conversations with an American Monk. It's Aware Talk Radio, Friday nights, 9:30 p.m. EST.
9:30 EST? Oh, that's great. Okay. Now tell us about your the book that's coming out very soon.
There's a book that is coming out this week. It's called Cosmic Synchronicity. It's my second book, and it's also structured in a similar way to Self-Disclosure, Changes from Within. Mm-hmm. Cosmic Synchronicity is coming out through Inner Circle Publishing. It's about half the length of Self-Disclosure, but it's set up to empower readers to, again, reframe adversity, but in a bit of a different way. Because in Self-Disclosure, you have questions at the end of each chapter where you can reflect on what's happening and what has been presented. But in Cosmic Synchronicity, you have the questions for you to answer first. And then you have a series of questions answered from more of a universal perspective, which mm-hmm. invites you to reflect on your answers on different levels. And again, depending on your set of circumstances, you will read the book in different ways at different periods of your life.
Okay. Okay. While I'm thinking about it, I noticed one of the participants in the chat room asked, do you have a meditation exercise, perhaps on your website or someplace, that would help beginners in particular quieten their minds?
Well, if you go on to my website, I'll put it in the chat room.
Okay.
If you go into the search in the header and you hit meditation, if you type in meditation, there are
okay.
some sample videos from YouTube that I have on there.
Okay.
I also would recommend a show that's on Block Talk Radio every day, 7 a.m. PST. I can put it up on the chat room as well. It's called
okay.
Nara Narayana. And it's about a half hour every day, and it's a wonderful meditation program for anyone of any level. If you're a beginner, you could get something out of it, and if you're more advanced, you could as well.
Okay.
Brian Shawarkosh does it, and he actually uses Tibetan sound bowls as part of his meditation, which are very peaceful.
Okay. You said that's on daily?
Yes, that's on daily. I'll put the title of it. Is Nara Narayana. I'll put it in the chat. And it
okay.
is 7 a.m. PST every day, which is, I guess, 11 in EST, but it depends on your time zone.
Right. You said PST, as in Paul? PFT?
Yes. Pacific
okay.
time.
Pacific.
I believe he's
okay.
based in California.
Oh, that's good. All right. That's wonderful. So the daily show is available there, the Nara Narayana. Meditation at 7 a.m.
Yes,
Pacific
and it's
time.
In the archives as well, so the listener
okay.
Can go and listen to any of the archive shows anytime.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So, and I enjoyed your reading from your book online on your website, so any of you who haven't been to her website yet, go over there and listen, and the setting is just beautiful. It's looking, well, you had two different settings on two different pages. And it was a beautiful setting there, so even the setting was conducive to quieting the mind and being so pleasant. So thank you for sharing that on your website. I went into your book a little bit and pulled out a few lines that were meaningful to me, and I'd like to have you say something about them. One of them is, depth is found in a being who laughs for no apparent reason. And I really relate to that
mm-hmm.
because occasionally I do that, and of course my kids think it's weird. But you talk in that section about the benefits of laughter. Could you
mm-hmm.
expand on that a bit?
Sure. To me, laughter is a wonderful experience that everyone has access to at any moment. And it's sort of an action of releasing tension. And many people experience a great deal of tension in their lives for different reasons. And they often forget the power of laughter and how that enables them to sort of let go of a lot of the things that they cling to that cause
mm-hmm.
that tension. And that particular quote or that you mentioned just sort of reminds people that simplicity is found in the simplest things or in gestures which are often underestimated. So that was why that sentiment was shared.
Yeah. And there is a physical difference that you can feel when you laugh, when you have a really good laugh. And I discovered when I was writing my book a movement called laughteryoga.org, where they have laughter clubs that meet, groups that meet mm-hmm. and laugh. Like you say, for no apparent reason, they give you instructions on how to get started laughing, even when there's no joke being told. You can do that, and then laughter becomes contagious when you're with other people mm-hmm. who are laughing. Then you begin to laugh too. So it's such an easy thing for us to do if only we remember to access it.
Children are wonderful reminders of that, too.
Yes, they are.
Just to interject, there's something that I read once, that children might laugh, 100 times a day when adults might laugh 1 to 5. And that uplifting energy is sort of a friendly reminder that that's something that we can all benefit from. And there are certain kinds of selective forgetfulness that is not in our best interest.
That's right, unfortunately. Well, and you know what, I think in our upbringing, at least in my upbringing, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, that we were often raised to believe that those are things we leave behind as we grow up, that you need to be serious, the absence of laughter or, silliness, they considered it. So I think we were often raised to not value the very thing that is so therapeutic, so helpful, and we have to get back to that, get back in touch with that. And I know that's my experience, that, we were cautioned not to laugh and be silly, to be serious. As you get older, you have to be serious. I want to mention another quote you had. Irritations are illusions. Could you expand on that?
Sure. Every sentiment that a person chooses to feel is a creation of the mind, and we create things for different purposes. But I've met a number of people over the years who will come to me with questions about their dreams, because I'm also a dream analyst, and anger, irritation, and fear are the most common sentiments or feelings that come out, and people will have questions about why they experience them and how they can get it under control. And many people are conditioned to forget that they actually create these feelings for a reason. They tend to want to avoid them or evade them rather than learn to understand them. And that's what I invite people to do through reading the book, is to get to know their emotions better. And I tell them that learning how to feel is actually a wonderful experience, because you sort of gain insight in doing that. And then you also learn how it feels to release emotions that you outgrow, and you gain the lessons from having them. And if you didn't feel angry, for example, Flora, you wouldn't know what anger was. Someone could describe it to you, but it's not the same. It's like getting secondhand information about a relationship. You can tell someone why something is working or not working, but when you're in a relationship, you have a completely different perspective because you're feeling what's going on.
Right. You mentioned also, now that you mentioned feeling just now, separate how you think from what you feel. This is a quote from your book. What others describe is not your experience. If you feel empty, then you are unaware of love inside. You do not require words to discern your truth or to conjure the fairy tale you already live. You create order and disorder and resolve what suits you to help unveil your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Could you expand on that? I think that's connected with what you just said about feeling.
To a degree, yes, and I noticed that one of your listeners in the chat is commenting as well. Some people do practice avoidance as a lifestyle. That's one thing that someone mentioned, because they don't want to deal with certain things. And one of the, I guess I would describe a what people tend to describe as a difficult lesson to learn is the idea of taking responsibility for mm-hmm. how they think and feel and why they do. And a lot of times people are conditioned that it's easier not to explore those sorts of things, but they don't realize by not exploring them, they continue to surface. And
right,
feelings
right.
that bother you, such as fear. Fear is a very good example, because when people have nightmares, mm-hmm. they will often ask me, well, why am I having this nightmare and why does it keep repeating? And in the case of a nightmare, there can be many reasons for them, but often there's some part of you that's trying to get your attention to deal with something or to give it your attention, and you're not doing that. And the brain is a wonderful tool, because mm-hmm. it wants to draw your attention to what you want to avoid. And so the idea mm-hmm. of practicing avoidance as a lifestyle, it's true many people do that, but that mm-hmm. isn't always in their interest.
It's definitely not in your interest. I want to ask about one more, and we're going to have about 4 minutes left. This is another quote. It says, "Few human beings really know who they are or how they got to be the way they are. They rarely self-examine. If you are aware enough to experience victory and defeat, you are beginning to distinguish sources of wisdom from what does not matter." Wow. I like that. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, people go through stages in their lives. Revelations is one way to look at them, where they sort of reevaluate the priorities in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people unknowingly give away their personal power. And what I mean by that is they assume that someone other than themselves is going to make their decisions for them, determine mm-hmm. what is an opportunity or not. Mm-hmm. And they forget that they actually make all of their choices themselves. They choose to give their power away, or they choose to reclaim that power and to determine what direction their life is going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
part of the reason why the book is such a wonderful empowerment tool, because it helps the reader reorient to focus on opportunities in front of him and mm-hmm. remember that all you have to do is take responsibility for the next step, and you determine the direction you will be able to go in. And you also
right.
determine how many options you have.
Hmm. That's a wonderful thing to remember. One of the reasons I wrote my book was that I grew up and lived around so many people through the years who acted as if they didn't know they had a choice, or they
mm-hmm.
forgot that they were forever attributing whatever was happening to someone else did this to me, or someone else made me do this. And I was motivated to write the book to emphasize that the choice is yours, how you react to any given situation, no matter how great or horrible we may judge it. You still have the power to respond the way you choose to. And once we get back
exactly.
to that, then, boy, have we opened up ourselves to so much more joy. I want to emphasize again for listeners that your book is available on Amazon, Self-Disclosure, mm-hmm. Changes from Within by Liara Covert. For those of you who have been empowered by this conversation, you want to definitely go over there and get it. And then on your website, dreambuilders.au, is that correct way to say your website for us again?
Sure. It's the Dream Builders Australia blog. It's blog.dreambuilders.com.au. There's information on that, on my books and my services and other articles there that people can get
right.
access to.
Yeah, and you mentioned dream analysis. That's something we can do on another show. That's exciting also to talk about that. I know you can't analyze dreams on the air perhaps with the group, but we can certainly talk about the power of that in helping them with our lives. Thank you so much for coming on again. It's been a joy as usual. And I want to thank my listeners for tuning in or for being over there in the chat room. We're at the end of today's show, and I urge all of you, who have been enlightened, encouraged, and empowered to please go over and share what you've learned with your family, your colleagues, and, of course, visit Liera's website. The recording will be available shortly after the show, so you can come back and download it and listen to it again. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next Monday, February 8th at 11 a.m. Goodbye, all. Thank you.
Color your life happy.